This is The Cast and the Furious.
Sure is.
When you're here, your family. I'm Murrin.
You almost said your last name.
I know. Not that it matters because you can find me just by my first name, but we'll just stick with that.
Yeah, and I'm Jonathan. Last name withheld because I'm a street racer and I don't want the fuzz to find me.
Yeah, also known as Racer X and Bandit for you kids on the street.
Kids on the street. This podcast is only for the kids on the street. Hey, you kids on the street. This podcast is for your ear holes only, just so you know. Welcome to the Cast of the Furious. We are on Chunk 3.
Also known as Wedge 3.
Oh, yeah. We got a new thing happening where, we got a Wedge
Slice
versus
3,
chunk.
Perhaps?
Oh, no. Are we all on the same page that slices are bad? We'll come back to that. Okay, let's introduce our guests.
If it's pizza, I'm down.
Let's introduce our guests so they can weigh in on this. Our first guest needs no introduction. Actually, neither of them needs any introduction because if you're not listening to their podcast, you're a dum-dum.
But we should still introduce them.
We should probably still introduce them. Our first guest, because we're talking cops, we got our favorite cop, Doug Greenberg.
Tank top.
Welcome, Tank Top.
Thanks for having me.
How many tank tops are you wearing at this moment?
I'm wearing two. I'm channeling my inner Vince, and I got two tank tops.
Nice.
Beautiful.
And our other guest is not wearing a tank top, but he's wearing a black t-shirt. So we're still on brand. Mm-hmm. It's Rick Ingham from Mad Max Minute.
Hello, guys. I'm actually wearing not just a black t-shirt, but is a heavy metal t-shirt.
Mm. But it has sleeves.
But it does have sleeves. So make of that what you will.
By heavy metal, do you mean Marilyn Manson? Because that would be on brand.
No, it's actually Judas Priestess, which is the all-female Judas Priest cover band. Their lead singer, Militia, actually sang the outro song for season 3 of the Mad Max Minute.
Ooh, well, I think we know what one of our ads is going to be today.
That's beautiful. And maybe not on brand for us, but on brand for you. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, welcome, gentlemen. We appreciate you coming out this early in the morning. It is an early morning recording. We all look super...
Oh, shut up.
What? It's earlier for Murrin than it is for anyone else.
It's not really early. Like, okay, so Jonathan, it's 9:45. Rest of you is 10:45.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not for me. It's early in the morning to be recording when we're normally recording at midnight.
It's still earlier than we usually record. Yeah. But for me, I just woke up.
At least you guys slept. I was up all night.
I woke up like this, y'all.
Knocking over the tractor trailers.
Oh, that's right. You were on your, you were out with your crew.
Yeah.
In your Honda Civics.
I was stealing some goods.
Yeah. Did you get a bunch of VCR combos?
Yeah. The TV VCR or the VCR DVD player.
Yeah.
Hey, those were purchased legally.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were purchased legally. The TV VCR combo, those are produces from my heist.
Okay, good.
Of course. I have a little bit of an anecdote to start us off.
All right.
Because we have Doug on here, we're talking about cops. I actually called the cops this morning.
What?
For real.
Are you
not
okay?
A good day when you have to do that. Some rando started ringing our doorbell really, really loudly and aggressively at 6 a.m. and saying, "Hey, come out, man. Hey, I know you're in there. Come out here." And we stayed in bed and hugged each other very tight. Uh-huh. And eventually he went away. But it was scary, and I'm very awake, and my nerves are frayed, but I'm ready to talk about family.
Okay, so how does one aggressively ring a doorbell? Because as far as
just
I understand
repeatedly.
It, you just press a button. Like,
yeah,
did he press it really hard?
Over and over again.
Yeah.
That was just something that happened to me this morning. There you go.
You got many junkies in that area?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
The dirty, dirty Beaverton. The dirty bee.
the dirty bee. Well, that name just reeks of innuendos.
Man, something sure is fishy in that town.
All right. Well, let's check the. Let me check the mailbox. I'll walk over here. See what we got. Let's see. Murrin, we do not have any mail from Corona or from the Olive Garden.
Dang it!
I mean, and Tim Hortons either. We're now just playing ads. We're just playing these companies' ads, daring them to care about us. And I tag them in every post.
They should either give us residuals for giving them free advertisements or sue us for using them.
I want one of the two things to happen. I need action at all times. I need conflict.
Yeah. Preferably through a tweet that tags us.
Yeah. Just a tweet cease and desist.
Yeah.
Just like,
We gave you free advertisement. Give us some free advertisement.
At Furious Cast, please stop showing our ads in your podcast.
Or like the thing that's all the rage nowadays when famous people keep getting these tweets. They tweet, stop sending me this shit.
Basically, I wouldn't mind an aggressive yelling at from the Olive Garden.
I think
Corona's probably got cool reps. I assume they have like a cool person that does their Instagram and their socials. Whereas Olive Garden, I bet it's someone's like sister who knows computers. That's how I feel about the Olive Garden's media presence on social media. Sure.
Yeah, I don't see them going against like Wendy's or McDonald's or doing sassy talkbacks like some of the other brands do.
Well, it's because they're family. They're like the mama. They're like the Italian mom. They don't want to be mean. They want to take care of all their kids. So they're like, you
come
know,
on,
nurturing.
You're skin and bones. You gotta eat.
You gotta eat.
You're wilting away to nothing.
Yeah, wasting down to nothing. So this week, the taglines that I found some good ones. I'm starting to have to go deeper. The first two were like the high level stuff we all know when you hear your family. Hey, maybe your family. I forget what it was last week.
Great salad. I've never heard that one before.
That one's amazing because that's when they just went away from family. They're like, let's just talk about the food because we haven't really talked
specifically
about it.
The salad, which is what everyone thinks about. Not pasta. Salad.
So I went and found an ad for the Olive Garden. The most important one that they did this after they got rid of the family. They started, remember when they were Italiano? Remember when they were like trying to like make sure you knew they were from Tuscany? They were like all over it. That they have experience true Italian inspiration. And then they have some vile cheese filled sofatelli. It looks like a pocketbook full of cheese. It is disgusting. It is disgusting. No, hey,
sounds like
Garden,
my kind of pocketbook.
We love you, but that's freaking disgusting. Anytime they stuff stuff with cheese, it's pretty bad.
I like the idea of stuffing things with cheese. Just don't call it after a couch. Like, I don't want to eat something that has sofa in the name.
It's sofatelli. I can see Doug's house. He has two sofatellis in the back right now. Hey, look at your sofatelli, Doug.
Stuffed with cheese. I have kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my lover seat to telly. And then we go to Corona. Corona has a million ads and they're all awesome. This one's good. Yeah. All right. Here you go. Log off, lime in, find your beach. I like that. Find your beach is
that's inspiring.
It's like follow your bliss.
That sounds like something out of a country song.
Find your beach and log off and
that
put
was actually
lime
Jimmy Buffett,
into
maybe.
Your
one season Corona was a sponsor of the show Ink Master, and that was like one of their shows was their the whole theme was find your beach.
Yeah, they've got a whole they've got a million of them. They've got like here's a fun one. You win some. Find your beach. So basically they're just all empowering you. I wish these were posters. I would put this in my house.
There's some nice scenery on those Corona ads.
Well, they're always the same. It's just, it's either the beach or a person in a chair looking at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I'd put that in my house too. It's very empowering. It's about like sort of empowerment and inspiration. It's a good message. Yeah.
And there's some more, but we're going to save those for the, for future episodes. But yeah, so guys, today let's find our beach.
Find your beach is, I feel like that's very on brand for us. Oh.
Murren can find his junky doorbell ringing.
Hey, Murren, come out here. I'm trying to find your beach.
I want him to find a beach and go stick his head in it.
He needs to find a beach. If that junkie found his beach, he might be a lot happier and less angry.
Yeah. Sincerely, I hope he finds his beach.
It's everywhere. It's coarse. Sounds a lot like Robert Town, but you know, this is a different guy. This is Portland Junkie.
You guys might not believe this, but wearing two tank tops is really hot.
Are your nipples on fire right now?
I'm sweating a little bit.
That's why when Vince does it, one of them is mesh. So
yeah,
it's basically
you got to wear one with mesh so the airflow, the one that touches your skin is mesh, and then you put the other one on top of it. That way you have a tiny amount of space for the air to move around.
So many little air pillows.
And it tickles your nips.
Tickles your nips.
The mesh definitely tickles your nips.
Yeah.
I assume that's why Vince does it.
Let's get to the actual show.
Naturally.
Okay, it's been like 20 minutes.
The actual show is, we're on chunk number three. Chunk number three starts where we left off at minute 53 and goes to 1 hour, 19 minutes, and 50 seconds. So we are three quarters of the movie. This is the third act, basically. We're in the act where everything ramps up. We left off, Johnny Tran and Vince. Oh, we love Vince. Showed up in the garage. They were torturing.
Oh, Lance. You mean Lance, right?
I said Lance.
No, he said Vince.
You said Vince.
I said Vince?
Yep.
Damn it.
Vince, Lance. It's hard to keep track of these guys.
So Vlance.
Vlance the Impaler.
Vlance comes in. Blah. Vlance comes in and they are torturing the, what's this guy again? He's the, fence.
Ted the fence.
Ted the fence.
He's the fence that never gets another scene. This is it. This is the only time he's in this movie.
We got no idea who he is coming into it. We got no idea who he is going out of it.
He's just greasier. He's just covered in 40 weight.
He's covered in 40 weight, which is, this is just, I hate it. I hate it. It's so disgusting. Getting waterboarded with oil. Ugh.
That is disgusting. It's very, when you hear him gurgling on the oil too, it just really, really puts you there.
Yeah. So he was their fence, so he was supposed to get them engines, but he didn't get them the engines, I guess. We kind of talked about this last time. I still don't quite follow it.
Yeah, what engines was he supposed to get that he doesn't have?
Were they
the
stolen?
Engines for the Civics?
Because don't fences deal in stolen goods, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So was he stealing the engines from someplace else and...
Or he's buying stolen engines? That's usually what a fence does, right?
Yeah.
Like buying stolen goods.
For them at a cheaper price.
Yeah.
Well, it's confusing. I like that we're talking about like... Now we're talking about economics. Now, does he buy it at a cheaper price and then sell it for, you know?
I wish Ted, they could have really made a character out of Ted and had him be like, I'll never get engines for you, Johnny Tran. You're evil.
I actually thought this was going to be the owner of the parts shop. That would have been a better, like, that would have meant something, I think. Don't you?
If it had been cared about it.
Yeah, because I've been like, oh my God, he's been in on this the whole time. And he's working with Tran. Okay. But he hired Brian. Oh, instead it's guy gets beat
some
up.
Guy. Ted the
and
fence. Now,
and Johnny Tran asks him to kiss his boots, which you never do, by the way. Don't ever do that.
That's the most degrading thing somebody
it's a trap.
Can demand.
Well, the worst part is he says, kiss my shoes. And there's something about saying, kiss my shoes. It's like, no, kiss my boots. You want to be wearing boots in that situation.
Is he wearing boots?
You think he wears shoes with no socks like Marin?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like a loafer? Like a casual loafer?
To those of you who were there for the live show, that's what I was wearing.
Kiss the top of my loafers.
Thank goodness he was wearing closed-toed shoes.
They're wearing biker shoes. They're wearing, like, motorcycle shoes, right? Like, they're wearing boots, like lace-up boots.
No, I think he says shoes, so he's probably wearing something with, like, something that doesn't quite go over the ankle. The main thing is he's wearing closed-toed shoes so that way when he kicks him, he doesn't stub his toe. And when he tells the guy to kiss his shoes, he's not asking him to kiss his bare feet. Because unless you're into that, I'm not. I don't understand it. But
Quentin Tarantino didn't direct this movie.
I don't think he is.
But it's so much better if it was Kiss My Sandals.
And he was wearing socks, too.
Yeah, kiss my what were those like toe shoes called?
Oh, the runner shoes that have toes for I hate those. What are those called? I bet sex positive Jarf knows what those are. He's a runner. I bet he would know what those things are called. What are they called? Finger toe shoes?
Toe shoes. Yeah.
What were the ones that the sandals that they nicknamed Air Jesus?
Oh,
the brown one. Were those Birkenstocks?
Well, Birkenstocks are back. Like,
yeah, that's something else.
You've got young boys, and I've got young guys. And when I go to like an event where there are girls in high school with my son, they all wear Birkenstocks. They are back.
Really? And
yeah. Crocs are also. Don't even get me started on that.
Are Birkenstocks the hiking sandals with the nylon?
No, that's a Teva.
No, Birkenstocks are like, they got the cork base with the wide leather straps.
And they usually have two straps on them.
Yeah.
Right. That's the Air Jesus, isn't it?
It doesn't matter because here's what those, you know what those shoes are called? Five finger shoes.
From Vibram.
Five finger shoes. That's so gross.
Is that like a joke, a play on words because they're not fingers, they're toes?
Hey, these aren't fingers, these are toes. They're so disconcerting. I can't imagine having, like, I barely can stand the sandal that you put the, that goes in between your big toe and your pointer toe. Yeah, the thong.
Flip-flops.
Flip-flops. Yeah. I can barely stand that. I can't imagine having that kind of meat in between every toe.
I don't got toes. I got feet fingers.
That's what we wear down here at the Jersey Shore.
Yeah?
Flip-flops.
Yeah. Flip-flops.
Yeah. I actually like a flip-flop. It's when I need to take the trash out or get the mail. That's what I go for.
Kicking junkies in the face.
Yeah.
I don't know about going out in public in a five-toed shoe. I mean, I can understand like those people that wear like the socks that have like little toe pockets and whatnot, but like hide that stuff in a regular toed shoe.
You can do that in secret.
I don't want you to walk up to me and be able to wriggle each one of your toes like you're in some sort of Hercules cartoon.
That's a very specific reference. You're referencing a childhood memory that none of us can access.
He's haunted. What? Rick is haunted.
That's like a damn Hercules cartoon.
That's where his aversion to feet started.
What are we talking about?
Who hurt you?
It started early.
All right, and then they move. They just quit. That scene's over. They hid from them. They got away. They left.
In this movie, sometimes scenes just end and we move on to something else without really any follow up, and just kind of have to go with it.
It's herky jerky in this movie. Like they'll fade to black and you'd be like, oh, I guess we're done here. Mm-hmm. And so they go right back to the fancy, celeb house, the celebrity wood house, and they've got all the cops talking and they're mad. They want to go after Tran. They think Tran's got all the stuff. Ted Levine's there, of course, drinking freaking coffee again.
Denying Brian a cigarette.
When I was reviewing these minutes, and actually my wife Julia, my co-host for Mad Max Minute, she was on the couch next to me when I was watching this show, but as I reviewed this segment of the movie after watching the whole thing together, she said that this is her favorite thing in the movie when the sergeant is like, no, don't give him a cigarette, he quit. I'm not quite sure why exactly it's her favorite thing, but I think it's just the appreciative, like, no, you gave up that habit. Don't go back to it because you're going to get lung cancer.
I like that you said Julia is your co-host for the Mad Max Minute, not your wife.
No, I said she was my wife first.
Co-host first, co-host wife second.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's how Murren does it. Murren's doing co-host first, wife second.
And then you're talking about you, right, Jonathan?
Yes. Yeah. When is our shoot for our engagement photos? And what swamp do you need me to meet you at?
Is that the joke about the swamp? I couldn't follow that.
Is that the joke? How many pictures do you have in a swamp?
It's a river. It wasn't a swamp. It was a river.
It's a picture, so the water's not moving, so I assumed it was a swamp.
I don't even think they have swamps in that part of the country.
Maybe it's a creek.
No, we have swamps. I basically
could be a creek.
Swamp.
Oh, well, maybe that picture will go up on the in the group. It's a very nice picture. It's cute, but you are standing ankle deep in a swamp that I'm sure.
There were a bunch of bugs on the bottom.
Okay. You should have been wearing five finger toes. Shoes.
I know. I was wearing sandals.
Oh, what kind?
They were like waterproof sandals.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what brand.
All right. Well, find out what brand so we can promote it on this show.
I think they were Keens. I think they're Keens sandals, which is actually made in Portland.
Hey, guys, do your feet hurt? Are you getting married? Wear Keens. That's the only ad I can come up with. Find your Keens.
Find your swamp.
Find your swamp.
Find your swamp.
Find your swamp, donkey.
And get out of mine.
Now, I don't know if you guys want to wait until the other side of the break for this, but I have so many questions about the whole law enforcement aspect of this.
No, let's get into it now. I was hoping
you'd have answers, Doug, because I don't know
some.
We can have. Of all the things, you can't have questions. We have to have more answers than we need questions.
I do have some answers, but my biggest question, well, it's not really a question, is it's more of a statement, but nothing really ruins a police investigation like bureaucratic shit. Like his superiors are flying in and he needs something to show them.
Mm.
You know,
like, well, because also this is a FBI cop like hodgepodge. Yeah. So there's multiple levels of like Ted Levine is his cop boss, right? Is that what we're assuming? Yeah. Ted Levine is a cop.
And whereas, then this other guy, Tom Barry, is the FBI representative.
Okay.
God, Tom Barry is riding Brian's ass.
Yeah, it's his job to just put the pressure on Brian so we can move the plot forward. Just to go over Tom Barry a little bit, he does show up again in Too Fast, Too Furious. He's also in Independence Day, and he also played Michael Jordan's dad in Space Jam.
Jordan's dad didn't play Michael Jordan's dad? Was he dead at that point?
Well, it was like in the beginning when it's young Michael Jordan, so it would have been too old.
Oh, I got you.
Too old.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. I remember, okay.
So this Bilkins guy, though, who, you know, the FBI does only investigations, they don't do any, you know, beat work, should understand the nuances of an investigation and how complicated they are and how much time they take. And just because of bureaucracy, he's got to put, you know, Brian under his thumb like that. And I just, you know, I don't think it's fair, man.
It is. Yeah, it really, this guy, what's his name? I forget. Tom Barry, the actor. I don't remember.
Bilkins. Let's call him Tom Barry.
Bilkins, yeah. Agent Bilkins.
Bilkins, yeah.
He really does kind of ruin this whole thing. Later on, he says, I don't care if you blow your cover to smithereens as long as you get a result. Like, how would that?
Yeah, that, you should care.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're investing.
Wouldn't that be
so
the opposite of helpful?
In this op.
And they can't let those truckers start going vigilante. That's the bottom line here.
My first cop question of this episode is, do you drink this many cappuccinos? Doug?
No cappuccinos.
Cappuccinos.
No ice no foam cappuccinos.
No.
Shout out to George Hendricks for coming up with the pun cappuccino.
We're also not snooty LA cops either. I'm, just a
Is that a thing? Level. Is this like very like on the nose? Oh, a bunch of LA cops drinking cappuccino, like the movie's trying to create. Is this something you guys think in the force? Like does each section of the country have the stereotypes that I think they have?
Yes.
Like you're from Jersey, you're a Jersey cop, so it's like, all right, yeah, okay, Jersey cop. You know, do cops buy into those stereotypes too?
Well, we, a department that's big like LA or NYPD who has, you know, they're like the major leagues where, you know, everything's at their fingertips. They want something, cost doesn't matter, they can get it.
Cappuccinos for everyone.
Yeah, cappuccinos up and down the West Coast.
On the West Coast, and then gabagool on the East Coast. I'll give you a plate of gabagool. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon? I want some gabagool.
Cappagool.
There you go.
Yeah, I think New York is like the baby brother, the baby stepbrother of LAPD. I think LAPD is the pinnacle of police work in the U.S.
So Beverly Hills Cop got it right. Like everybody else totally. Is dirty and gross cops, like in the field cops. And then you go to LA and you're like, what is this magical, beautiful place?
As far as our viewpoint from all the way over here on the East Coast, I would say they got it pretty much on the nose.
Yeah. Well, cause now all the junkies have moved out to Portland. So it's a lot easier for LA. They've had a lot of growth in the past few years.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be winter soon. So they're going to head back down to the Southern California in a little bit. I like the line when he talks about like, well, he's trying to make the case for Tran and he's like, yeah, they got the DVD players and they're showing generally psychotic behavior.
That's profiling, right?
Yes. And
when you say you're showing,
and that's what
generally
Paul Walker says. He's like, we don't have any evidence. We just have behavior.
And psychotic behavior is not probable cause.
No. Nope. But then he says it is. He says we have probable cause.
Is that what the cop told you this morning, Myrn?
You have probable cause to lock up the junkie.
I would say so. But
now,
do you guys
know what probable cause is?
Ooh,
is this a test?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
better answer right.
My first gut, not looking at anything. My first gut reaction is probable cause is anytime. Any action that indicates a crime is being committed, like that's like the boilerplate in my mind.
Yeah, it's a like reasonable. It's like a reasonable man standard. It's like if a reasonable person believes that a crime has been committed, then you can make an arrest on scene. Or if like when you're signing a complaint for something that has happened already, if there's enough evidence present, then you know a complaint or a warrant can be signed.
So, like a garage full of combination VHS DVD players, when all of those things have been stolen in the past, could count as probable cause for a search.
This is where it gets a little hairy because I'm not sure it does. I think
they didn't have a warrant to go in to begin with.
That's
to
see
the thing that they saw
illegally. Yeah.
And I've watched SVU, right. So I know that comes up sometimes. If you see a bad thing, but you didn't have a reason to be in the place to see the bad thing,
yeah.
It can be inadmissible.
Inadmissible.
So like later on when they come bursting into Johnny Tran's house and the Silence of the Lambs guy holds up that piece of paper that we're led to believe is a warrant. A judge has to put his name on it. A judge approves and signs that warrant. Now when you get a warrant, you have to speak to the judge and you have to present your case.
Gotta go before a judge and show cause.
Yeah. All right, we gotta take a little break here. We'll probably have an ad with Al Pacino talking about cappuccinos. So, buckle your seatbelts for that.
Wah.
Wah.
Wow! Al Pacino!
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
What's my name?
Dunkachino.
It's a whole new game.
Dunkachino.
You want creamy goodness? I'm your friend. Say hello to my chocolate blend. Attica, ooh, latte light. This whole trial is out of sight. They pull me back in with hazelnut too. Caramel swirl, I know it was you. Everyone wants my Dunkachino. Can't get enough of my Dunkachino. Kids from 7 to 17 lining up for my Dunkachino. What's my name?
Dunkachino.
Dunkachino.
Okay, so the warrant that what's the guy's name?
Sounds Tanner, Bilkins.
Okay. Bilkins.
Tanner is the sergeant.
When they go into Johnny Tran's house, he holds up a warrant, a search warrant.
That's Tanner. Sergeant Tanner.
Right. So they
I'm Sergeant Tanner.
So the judge, you have to do
would
a
you
very...
warrant me? I'd warrant me.
I'll do my Tanner later.
Okay.
That's how he got the piece of paper. He walked into the judge's office and he opened up the judge's robe and he's tucking.
Ah.
Doing a little dance.
I when I was watching this, I was like looking at that guy and saying, I know what your pubes look like. Which you should never have to say about another man.
You say that a lot, though. You said that a lot last weekend. It was disconcerting. We weren't even talking about anything, and I was not naked, so I don't know what
I meant. Face pubes.
I got tons of those, man.
Yeah.
So they have to do a very detailed affidavit to present to the judge, and the judge goes over this affidavit. And
wait, whose affidavit? Is he in the IMDb?
He's a constant poster on Mighty Mix. He's real free.
It's Dave Palace's racer name.
Classic affidavit.
So there has to be tons of evidence on this thing to get a search warrant because you are breaking in somebody's door and you are going through every nook and cranny of their goddamn house to find stolen, products of your heists. So, I don't think they have enough. Maybe if they had the Honda Civics and the matching tires along with the DVD players.
Funny that they don't actually talk about the rest of the stuff they have, the evidence they have for this case. They're basically pinning everything on Brian. Like they haven't talked about they have samples of the treads maybe used in there and they can match them to the – you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a little more – I'm not getting as much forensics as I thought we would get. I mean, they shoot a harpoon into a car, so you think you can be able to track where the harpoons are from?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on that I feel like
in
this
movie,
there's like...
Do harpoons have serial numbers? I would hope.
Probably.
We see one later in this chunk, and they're very specific looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like the harpoons that I'm sure you could buy at any Walmart that's close to the water.
Although what they do in the first heist scene is they just take the whole truck.
Right.
So...
Like, do they even recover the harpoons?
I don't know.
Do the trucks just disappear?
Maybe. Although it's hard to disappear a whole truck, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, Vin Diesel eats it. Sense. He eats the truck.
Yeah.
That's why they always are eating in the backyard. It's like, oh, we got to eat another truck. Someone say grace. Here we go.
Well, you can understand why truckers are going to start arming themselves. Because if the trucks and the truckers are going missing, like, okay, it's one thing to lose your... container full of combination VHS DVD players and stuff, but if you're also losing the truck that you drive, like truckers own those vehicles,
yeah.
Right out.
Yeah, like, I don't think they are, because remember the truckers union is gonna take any matters in their own hands, and then they talk later about At some point, these truckers are going to have guns. I think what's happening is they're getting robbed. They're taking, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. They must take the truck somewhere because they don't have any vehicles with them to hook the cargo of the truck onto.
Maybe they just like, they take the truck and they knock out the driver with the dart thing. And then maybe they just take the truck and like strip it down and then leave the driver somewhere.
Oh my God. They must be so pissed if their truck's getting stripped down.
Like that's the thing. If they're just driving the trailer somewhere and then dumping the trailer and then leaving the driver in his truck intact, like that's one thing. Like you're losing your, you know, that stuff's insured. That's fine. But if they are taking your truck's engines and your truck's tires and parts out of your truck, like that's your livelihood. Heck yeah, I'm going to get a gun and protect that.
I was also thinking, you guys mentioned, I think last episode, how like in the future movies, they say that they were like Robin Hood types stealing from bad guys.
I say they're not. It's funny that who they've become later in movies is if they're the heroes, like Ludacris giving money to people, like making the ATM spew out money. You know, there's like a lot more Robin Hoodness.
Later, they're like the A-team.
Well, if the insinuation is that they were doing that from the beginning, and this movie, they're also like these electronics belong to some mafia guy or something. Maybe these truck drivers are arming themselves to prevent them having to answer for why their shit was stolen again to the mafia guys, well, to the big bosses.
The question of like what the movie wants you to think of this gang is not always clear to me, because I think mostly I get that like we're supposed to think they're cool and be on their side. Whereas in Point Break, which is of course based on, at the end of the movie, we're totally sure that Bodie and his gang are bad. Like, they're charismatic, they're cool,
right,
they
go further than this gang ever does. This gang,
that's true,
does have a limit.
No one gets killed here. That
or
we
at
know
least
of.
No one's killed by the gang.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah.
The gang's actions
other
kills
people,
one person, but yeah.
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 No, I agree. I agree with that. It's also it's one of those weird ones where you're looking at the way that this movie decided, okay, we're going to have these people and they're going to be sympathetic. We're going to give them some sob stories. His dad dies. We'll get to that. And he witnessed it, and that was part of who made him who he was. He also almost beat to death a guy.
Yeah,
they keep flipping it back to, am I supposed to be on this guy's side? They're never victims. Have you noticed that in most movies, a victim gets gets the heartstrings of the audience because you're like, oh, I feel bad for him.
Only if there's a sad bit of music playing when they're telling
the
story.
In this movie, you're like, I feel bad for him. Oh, wait, no, I don't. Screw that guy. He beat up somebody who was, you know, who clipped his dad in a race.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and he also steals stuff because he wants to get his own, get some of his own. It's like, okay, he's not a good guy.
And we'll see later on too. Even Brian realizes that. Even though he's friends with this guy, he is a true psychopath when he goes after Tran at the race wars.
Mm-hmm. Race wars.
I never knocked on anybody.
We'll get there. Well, luckily we've been talking for 40 minutes and we are 2 minutes into this chunk. So let's move on from the cop stuff.
We've been drifting a little bit.
We've drifted a little. Yeah. Let's drift back in. We move on to the next scene. Yet another another cut after this. Brian is looking for more information. They go to this great scene, and we see tiny Dominic Toretto inside of the car. This is my favorite screenshot, is him. He's inside Brian's car. But not inside like a normal human is. He's inside where the engine is. He's like, crouched in the engine.
I'm the engine,
he looks
Brian,
like
Brian. Get it? I'm the engine.
He's like a little Oscar the Grouch.
It's so awesome. And later on, it's not that he stays in there for like a second and jumps out. He's in there this whole scene until they move to the next scene.
Yep.
It's so great. It makes me laugh. It's just him inside having a heart to heart with Brian. I'm on the inside here and you're like, peekaboo. It's me. He basically looks like Mini-Me inside of a meat body that he's just like controlling it. So they're talking and they're having a heart to heart because Brian's taking Mia out on a date because, you know, this investigation, he was just ridden by his superiors to get more information. So the first thing he decides is, hey, I'm going to go on a date with Mia, who has nothing to do with this.
He was literally just accused of, quote, going native, which is problematic in its own
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's
and
what Sergeant Tanner said.
The next thing he does is like, oh, I think I'm just going to go even more native.
Well, it is his job to try and work his way more into their good graces.
Oh, he wants to work into something, all right.
Oh yeah. No. Well, as the other guy said, I'd get off to her surveillance photos too if I were you.
That's not what he said. Can we go back to that? His voice is dubbed over in that scene. Did you notice his lips are not moving?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
No.
I think he's talking about pleasuring himself to those photos. Instead, it's like, I could look at those photos all day. they made it much more PG. This movie toes a weird line with
it's really gross even after they changed it. It gave me skin crawlies. Yeah.
Yeah.
The jeebs. Yeah.
Yeah. Von Dutch, he says, you break her heart, I break your neck.
You break her heart, I'll break your neck.
Is Jessica giving you pancakes?
No, there's someone at the door again.
God damn it!
To go get my baseball bat. Just keep doing it. Just keep talking. I'll be right back.
Hey, let's all go answer the door together. Here. Oh, here we come. It'd be weird if that guy comes in and gets in the booth.
Hey, special guys. Guest.
Murray's not here anymore. How's this work? You know, I used to podcast before I started freebasing.
It's a slippery slope.
It really is. You know what? Heroin is a gateway drug. I didn't know if you knew this.
I used to be one of the top podcasters. Mark Maron invited me over to his garage once. Mm-hmm. I was never the same. You got to watch out for Joe Rogan. He'll get you on the gunge.
That's how it started. He got me on gunge, and then he bought me a pair of those flexi toe shoes. And it was all downhill from there.
Did you hear
He's
that?
Back. No.
Okay. Good.
Was that the guy?
That was the guy.
Are you kidding me?
Yep, you could tell. He was like an old, like older looking guy. Kind of looked like Harry Dean Stanton with a trucker cap.
All right.
That was.
He looks like. Hey, are you a movie fan? He looks like Harry Dean Stanton. He just died. He just died. Man? You know him from like a lot of movies.
Yeah, Alien. You seen Alien?
That is probable cause right there.
Looking like Harry
Anyone
Dean.
That looks like Harry Dean Stanton looks like they're up to some shit. You're like, there's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah. I got to wonder how much meth he's done this morning.
Oh, yeah. He seemed very confused. Anyway, this has been a dramatic episode, but let's continue talking about... Where did my notes go?
After they talk about breaking the heart and have a little heart-to-heart inside of the car... Dom takes Brian and shows him his baby, mm-hmm, the 1970 Dodge Charger.
It's so gorgeous.
Oh, this car is the best. I'm a huge gearhead, as we all are.
Oh, yeah.
And this car is amazing. I don't know why it's amazing, but it has a thing that comes out of the front like Mad Max, and so that's why it's amazing.
Well, yeah.
What is his car, Rick? The Mad Max.
It's
car.
It's like a 1973 XB Falcon. Okay, say. It's like a Ford.
Is it because Australia had different cars, so it has a different. It's a different, but it's basically this car.
Pretty much,
like, pretty
it's
similar.
Very
yeah,
19 similar.
Same era muscle car.
Yeah, it's the Dodge Charger. Yeah.
Yes, I believe so.
Well, it's the same basic body type. Yes.
Yeah, similar at least.
Can you imagine if they had this engine in a Dukes of Hazzard car? They would have gone to the damn moon when they hit one of those ramps.
Seriously, they never would have come down.
You hear the music here, like, diddle, diddle, diddle. And like, the Duke boys have gone to the moon. Diddle, 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 diddle.
How are them boys going to get back from the moon?
And basically the commercial break would be them in the air. And it'd be like, well, they're not back yet. So I guess we're just going to vamp with Uncle Jesse and Cooter or whatever his name was. Mama, look up in the air. I see the Confederate flag flying through the air. It's a sign the South shall rise again. It's the sign we've been waiting for. Oh, no.
The Confederates will conquer the moon now.
Yeah. A Confederate moon. This is a 900 horsepower muscle car. This thing is a hoss. I did not know. He's never driven it. So this is pristine. And then we get an actual name drop for Rick's nickname. They said there's so much torque in the chassis, it's twisted off the line.
Hell yeah.
And Rick is nicknamed Torque. So Torque, Tank Top, Racer X, and Bandit. You're the first person to have their name come up in, cause you used to be Nas! Used to be Nas, Murren. But you changed your name, so you're the first person to have an organic drop of your name.
Congrats, bro.
I take it back, actually. Didn't Dom call him a wheel? Didn't he say, were you a wheel man? Didn't he say that?
Yeah, he did. He said,
then Robin got the first. Robin gets the first drop of diegetic nickname.
That's not what that means.
I know. This is the I live life a quarter mile at a time. This is where we get 95% of what we're ever going to find out about Dom.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah. I would,
for the rest of the movies.
I would love to bring this into an audition. So like, I'm going to do the Dominic Toretto speech from The Fast and the Furious.
That's a picture of my dad, which they do not show.
No.
he just kind of like points over to the door like, there's a picture over there. File not found. Don't look.
There's like seven articles pasted to that wall.
That's a picture of my dad.
I watched my dad burn to death.
Yeah, they said he. Well, he didn't. No, he actually didn't hear him burn to. Listen to him screaming. He listened to. He saw him burn to death, and heard him scream. And then I was told later those screams were mine.
It was me that was screaming.
Hey, I'm Grover. It was me that was screaming. Monica. Monica was my dad's name.
Minaj! Oh, what an ironic thing that is. My father, Monica Toretto, famous stock car driver. Yeah, so his dad was killed in a race on the final turn. Another driver clipped his bumper. Kenny Linder, and he smashed into the wall at 120 miles an hour and burned up.
Yeah, this is the classic, it's okay that I nearly beat someone to death because they hurt me excuse.
Yeah, and also this scene really does not age well with what has happened to Brian, what has happened to Paul Walker. It's like, as I was listening, I was just like, ugh. He's basically telling him what's going to happen.
Oh, it's weirdly prophetic.
It is. It hurts my heart.
Kenny Linder, pro racer, but now since he got beat by Dom, he's a janitor. He has to take the bus to work. He can't drive anymore, which is the ultimate tragedy.
I assume, he's got maybe something that happened to his hands and feet and arms. And like, I can't tell if he's, I don't know if he has brain damage or if he's so hurt that he cannot literally drive a car.
Well, you saw like half of his face was completely busted up. It could be that he just completely lost vision in one eye and then it could messed up the vision in the other eye so bad that he's like legally blind or something like that.
That'd be a good name for the next Fast and Furious movie. Fast and Furious Legally Blind. Oh, it's just a blind guy who drives by listening. How awesome would that be?
That would be pretty sick.
It would be a 2-second show because he just crashed into a wall in like a second.
Isn't the next Fast and the Furious like Fast 10? Or are we still on Fast 9?
We're on Fast 9 is being done now. And then Fast 10, your seatbelts.
Okay.
Fingers crossed is going to be the name of
it's Fast 10. It's right there.
If it's not Fast 10, your seatbelts, I'm going to stop this podcast. I'll tell you that right now.
It's so perfect.
I won't do it. He feels bad. So we all are supposed to feel for him. Great.
Yeah, because they banned him for life. Like apparently you can't beat another racer nearly to death because they will revoke your privileges of racing.
Especially when it's like, he didn't do it maliciously. At no point do they say he did it maliciously.
Yeah.
They said he clipped his bumper.
He didn't. He didn't bump him. He didn't ram him. He rubbed him.
Rubbing is racing.
Rubbing is racing.
That's going to be on a different show. That's a different thing.
Van Rubbin.
Van Rubbin.
That's also a, that's a different show.
It's a different show. It's okay. Everyone that listens to this show listens to that show. It all sure. works out. It's all one. But we got a big MXMCU. We got the movies by minutes cinematic
sure.
universe.
We so. All know what references we can make in this world. That's good. I live my life a quarter mile at a time. Nothing else matters in that 10 seconds or less. Again, similar to Point Break, where that's, you know, they're looking for that high, whether they get it from surfing or skydiving or robbing banks. It's that everything, they're free. They don't think about anything else.
Well, listen to your new friend talk about how his dad died, what do you want to do? You want to go on a date with his sister?
Oh, yeah. After he said...
To a Mexican slash Cuban question mark restaurant.
All right.
Cha-cha-cha.
I feel like that was definitely in Dom's like mind. He's like, okay, you know what? The one thing that's going to kill any boner chances, let's bring him home, show him all the stuff from our dead dad. That way when he takes Mia out later, his mind's going to be like, oh, man, dead father. And
especially when they have fajitas and all that stuff is sizzling.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, no, it's dumb.
Just like, when my dad caught on fire.
Hey, Mia. Oh, I'm doing Dom's voice. Okay. Hey, Mia, see those fajitas over there?
Is that supposed to be Brian?
Do you hear those fajitas screaming? Dom, every time he sees fajitas, he just starts screaming. Oh. No, in my mind, Dom has gone to this restaurant before, and he's just talking to Mia, and then plate of food comes by, he's like, ah!
He just grabs like the cast iron pan and starts beating the meat, just like slamming it down.
I'm going to make this meat take the bus to work!
Oh my gosh, it would have been amazing if Dom had went to that same restaurant and was sitting like two tables over. And every time a fajita plate came by, we'd just lean over and be like, ah.
Or just him with a bat, and he's just like smashing. Because when they walk with the fajitas, there's like a fajita walk. We all have seen it, where they come out like, here are your fajitas. Like they come out like and present the fajitas.
Opa.
And he's just like with a bat, like running up at a full tilt and just hitting the fajita plate and the scalding hot pan out of his hand. So, what I was saying before, is this a Mexican restaurant? I don't like classifying restaurants as just a thing. Like, you know, I say that having dragged Olive Garden for the past 3 weeks, but, you know, is this a Mexican restaurant? The music doesn't sound Mexican. It sounds Cuban. Do we have a consensus on where we are?
I'm no ethnomusicologist, so I wouldn't be able to verify that. Yeah, they really do emphasize that it's a Cuban restaurant. Like they don't,
and they lean into Cuba a lot in these movies.
Yeah, they go there in Fate of the Furious, a Cubano sandwich. It's a good sandwich.
I'm a sucker for a Cuban.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I will eat a midnight Cuban sandwich. What do they call it? There's a bunch of different names for it.
Medianoche.
Oh, it's so good with pickles. I hate pickles on sandwiches. Not on a Cuban.
It
has to be on
a
Cuban. Oh, let's do that. Let's start yet another thing. Pickles on sandwiches.
Yes.
No?
Especially on a Cubano.
Mine's a no except for a Cubano.
Okay.
It's the only one I'll eat.
I'll take them on just about, well, not any sandwich.
Okay. Now a burger counts as a sandwich, right?
Oh, Jesus, Rick. No, we can't do this.
What did you just say? How dare you? For 45 years, I have taken pickles off of hamburgers since I was 0 years old.
So have you ever tried them?
Or yes.
Are you always okay? So
I think they're too sour on like the crappy the crappy pickle on a burger. It doesn't work for me. Whereas a Cubano sandwich is so salty mm-hmm. and savory, it needs a sweetness to make it edible. Otherwise you're eating it and you're like, "Oh my god, there's so much salt."
Yeah, there are some sandwiches that like pickles very much welcome. Burgers, totally for it. Cubans, absolutely. I'm not going to go to Subway and have them throw pickles on my just regular sandwich, though.
No.
Especially not a hot, cold sandwich with pickles. Mm. Forget that noise.
They do make the bread soggy, which can be an issue. You have to do it right.
I like that it's genetic that they can't tell a story. he's like, tell me about this. And she's like, it's a long story.
It's like, where else are they going to go?
They just did this. We just did this line. Dom, this is the third time that someone has said, it's a long story.
A Toretto has said this line.
That's why we're in this movie, for long stories about your background.
It's really, it's not a long story at all. She doesn't go into much detail. She says, so yeah, Dom and Vince were childhood friends since third grade. And then Letty,
Jesse and Leon showed up and never left.
There's no, yeah, she gives no story
this
for those
guys. This is like Murren's new roommate who showed up at his door this morning.
Fully Harry Dean Stanton was on the team here. Jesse and Leon get no backstory. She's like, no, we don't have, the writer was just like, no, we don't care. Just like, they just showed up.
And then they're just like, what's his face? Doesn't have a last name he can pronounce.
Yeah, Hector.
Hector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Hector's he's a different gang. Yeah, Hector's gang, or Hector's team, I should say. Letty grew up down the street. Letty grew up down the street. She liked cars since she was 10. But then when she turned 16, she had Dom's attention. Don't love that. Another uncomfortable moment. And I can tell that Jordana Brewster is also kind of uncomfortable saying it. She kind of it's funny how that happens. Yeah, it's funny.
It's not good acting either. It's she's trying to sell a line that sucks.
Yeah, there's not helping. To clarify, in real life, Vin Diesel is 11 years older than Michelle Rodriguez. So, mm-hmm. They did date, but I mean, she's not 16. But if that was the case, that would be illegal. I did read that the character of Dom Toretto is supposed to be 24. He's actually 34. I guess the character is supposed to be 24. It does not look 24.
So in universe, they're like a year apart.
Sure. I guess we got to go with that. Otherwise, it's statutory.
Let's go with that. Let's go with that.
In canon, Vin Diesel is 24 in this movie.
Great. So yeah, then we get this line that she just clunks out. Speaking of clunker line, she goes, "Dom is like gravity." Okay, I was like, "All right, that's not what gravity is." Let's go check this out first of all. Gravity is a force that pulls on that attracts on based on mass. Okay.
Well, he has a lot of mass.
Yeah, like social mass. You know.
Look, gravity is not a thing.
Oh, yeah. No. Gravity is not a thing. The earth is flat.
Well, it's a thing. It's more like a phenomenon because like gravity isn't the thing that things are attracted to. Gravity is the force that allows one object be attracted to the other object.
The force
that's
that is all
my,
around
that's
us.
That's why my wife is
us.
Attracted to me. My wife's attracted to me because of gravity, right?
Right. Gravity is in all things.
No, gravity is not inside of everything. Gravity is the friends we made along the way.
So saying Dom's like gravity is completely incorrect. You could say
he has gravitational pull. He's a planet.
He's a planet.
He's like a planet.
Dom, you're like a planet. You're a huge planetoid.
And his, you could say maybe his personality is the gravity that draws everything to him.
Oh, I
like that.
She could have just said he has gravitas.
Ooh.
He has gravitas?
He has gravitas.
Maybe she thinks gravitas is gravity. Maybe she was mispronouncing gravity.
What?
She's from France.
Okay. She is from France. All right, you want to do something else? What else are we missing?
Let's try it.
All right, that's fine. And that's that bit was not that long, so don't worry about it. Oh my God, did we lose all of the standing on your neck? That was the most recent one. Yeah, okay. All right. Cool. All right, just stop this.
I like the metaphor though, because Dom just drifts through the cosmos and other people just glom onto him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You should have said Dom. You should have said Dom has gravity.
Yeah. Okay. That would have made it.
You know, maybe like Dom has a gravity about him.
Yeah.
She's trying to be deep. Instead, she says, Dom is like gravity. And you're like, okay.
So if Dom's like gravity, I was thinking, I had a question. What law of physics are you like?
Oh, that's interesting.
We have, Avogadro's law.
When I think of the laws of physics, I also think of the seven deadly sins. So I'm like, am I sloth? Is that a physics term?
I'd be gluttony.
Well, we'll come right back and we'll find out what kind of, what physics things we are after this message.
Down, down, down. I'm a victim of gravity. Everything keeps falling down on me. No matter where I go, the force is there, I know.
Me down, 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 down.
It's all around town now.
It's like a magnet deep inside the ground. When I lift something up, I can feel it pulling down.
Pulls me in the pool. Pulls rain down on me.
I'm a victim of down, 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 gravity, yeah.
Doug, you've been quiet for the past 30 minutes. You okay over there, buddy?
Yeah, I had a junkie I had to go throw off my front lawn.
Oh, the junkies are attacking.
Oh, so Murrin. Problem today.
I didn't know Murrin's phone went directly to you, and then you went to make sure Murrin's okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Doug.
What a good friend you are.
That's what we do. We're family.
So anyway, what kind of physics are we? We kind of teased that before the break. What law of physics are we?
Oh, I'm definitely friction because I make things hard to move, and if you rub me the wrong way, things are going to get heated.
Oh.
Let's see if I can pop my. Oh, nope, I can't be a tough guy and pop my knuckles. Oh, well.
Here, I can pop mine. Let's see.
There we go.
Ooh, that was nice.
Thanks.
That was concerning.
Guys, I can't type anymore. I think I broke my
hand. You should go to a doctor.
Well, I think I'd probably be Boyle's law, that temperature is remaining it states that temperature remaining constant, volume of a given mass of a gas varies inversely with the pressure of the gas. So that describes me perfectly.
I am definitely kinetic energy.
Nice.
I am the energy of an object when I'm in motion. When I'm not, I have zero kinetic energy.
Okay. So you could also be, I feel like I could also be the law of conservation of energy. It can neither be created or destroyed, but it can transform from one form to another.
Based on this recording, I think Doug is a simple machine. It's a basic mechanical device for applying force and doing work.
Sure, that works. That works.
All right.
What do you think, Doug?
I'm just so...
Yeah, we may have had some technical issues during this record, so it'll be smoothed over. Don't
That's
worry.
That's what we call
Don't
a
worry.
Peek behind the curtain, as I like to say. Ooh. But, yeah. Doug, sometimes simple machines are the best. You can't do...
Well, thank you.
You need to do a lot of things.
So after dinner, this clunky dinner, they...
She says, want to go for a drive?
We all know what that means.
Yeah.
Right?
She's like, yeah, that story was kind of a, you know, kind of just fizzled out. Wasn't very interesting. So I guess we'll just drive. And I have to say, if I was on a date and the girl took me for a drive like this, that'd be pretty hot. I'd like it, I think.
That would be hot. And also... Especially if they got to go and have sex at his work.
Yeah. Yes. Does Where he they wake live up? In the back room of his job?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, Rick's at his job right now. Rick, can you imagine having sex in that room?
No.
In the corner in a cot?
There is carpet on this wall, as you can probably see.
Yeah, there is.
At least there's plenty of lube on hand at his shop.
Oh, yeah. Rick works at a sex, sex shop.
I mean Rick's workplace.
No,
I meant
Brian's.
Oh, I got you. There's lube. I got you. Okay. Oh, some of that 40 weight that we saw earlier in the movie. Oh, I wouldn't put that in turtle.
No, don't do
good.
That.
That's
I'm
a bad.
That's a joke. Guys, don't try that at home.
Don't ever put oil inside your body, people. Very bad.
But yeah,
it feels fantastic, but it's very bad.
Yeah, probably not even that. So is this where Brian's been staying this whole time?
Okay. Yeah. This is what we saw at the beginning. He changed his
shirt. That is so sad.
Yeah.
Like that.
It is sad because you'd think at this point he'd be able to stay. I mean, Leon and Jesse just showed up. I think we're at the point where you could just stay in the house. I'm sure he doesn't want to do that because he knows Dom will murder him if he stays in the house and bones his sister.
Yeah.
I have a question. Is the car ride supposed to, like, be the sex insinuation?
I think so.
I think it's Foreplay. Yeah.
Like a dancing scene in a movie.
Like the train going through the tunnel.
It's four on the Foreplay.
Mia wants to run him through the paces, and if he can get through all of the crazy driving without crapping his pants, then he's Bonetown material.
Bonetown.
We're going to Bonetown.
Really
want to
paint a picture with words, yep. Rick.
I watch enough of these sex scenes in these movie by minute podcasts that, you got to vary.
Yeah,
it
why
up.
Do you keep requesting? Sex
I don't
scenes?
Request the sex scenes. Okay, I didn't choose the sex scene life. The sex scene
they
life
chose you.
Me.
There you go.
Okay.
Right.
The driving scene is only about 15 seconds. So yeah, that says a lot about Brian's.
So is the sex.
That's what I was getting.
I mean,
at.
It is Fast and Furious. Hello.
Yeah, it's got to be Fast and Furious.
It's basically the sounds that Dom made when he saw his father burn up. It's a lot of
it's over. Very, very furious.
Very furious.
Then we get another before we see the morning after. We also get another heist scene. Oh wait, no, we don't. It's only 5 seconds long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not even a heist scene. We get a heist. We just get a. This is by the BT Dubs. We're doing a heist.
Yeah, it might have even been the same scene from the beginning of the movie, just filmed from a different angle.
I feel like it was. It's the same truck.
Yeah.
If they're on the same road.
If not for Vince popping out the top of one of the cars, you would think it's just an aggressive passing maneuver.
Yeah.
So next morning, they have boned, and now we get to the most upsetting part of this. There's a big montage. They're going to go after Tran. They're going to they got the warrant. They got everybody set up. Brian's ready to go take him down. And Letty and Dom are starting to get wooey. Man, yeah. in the Dom's garage. Yeah,
there's a lot of hands on.
That's
the
a kind
body.
Way of saying
so many meat hands.
Ugh. He gets two giant handfuls of her ass.
Yeah, her leather-clad ass. She's wearing these leather.
They take
pants.
Off his shirt, and this is our first seeing of Dom's physique. Really, his chest in this movie. I mean, at this point, he was. Oh, by the way. It is so disconcerting to watch Vin Diesel kiss someone. It is like watching a porterhouse steak that someone's cut a hole in the middle of, like, and made it make mouth movements, like, you stick that on someone else's face. It is so.
He has a lot of face.
It is so upsetting. He has a lot of face. Hey, go to our TeePublic. We got our first merch up. We have a pin of Vin Diesel called Pin Diesel, and basically his face is eating. His eyebrows are eating the words. So go look. We'll put up a link, and you guys can buy a pin. But yeah, Vin Diesel has a lot of face. Is the perfect way to say what this is.
He's gonna show her his little Groot.
Oh, gross.
Well done. She takes off his shirt and kind of whirls it around her head like a helicopter.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
They're having fun. They're having fun with it.
Yeah.
Hey, they're just kids having fun, expressing their sexuality, Doug. There's nothing wrong with
it.
I mean, Vin Diesel's kind of disconcerting.
I'm not fine with it. It is so dirty in there.
Yeah.
There is grease everywhere.
Oh, and sweat. The amount of sweat. Yeah. It's like a, what is it? Did Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch sing that song about making people sweat, or was that someone else?
I think so. I want a sweet sweat coming out
your pores.
What
do you think they're called? The Funky Bunch. They all smell like sweat.
I think the most concerning part of this scene is when Vin Diesel takes that giant big toe of a head of his and just buries it.
He motorboats her, or he probably does. You can't hear the sounds. But.
What's the car equivalent of motorboating someone? Fan belt? Fan belting somebody?
He moves his head so slowly, it's like... It's not even like motorboat. It's like rowboating.
Well, because he can't move that chunk of a face. He can't move that steak face fast enough. He's just like...
His neck muscles aren't strong enough to hold his giant head up.
That's why he works out so much, so he can hold up his head.
That's right.
Just like the Batman suit from the first two Batman movies, he just can't move his neck. He's just like a... He has to kind of look where he's... You know, he has to kind of move his whole body to look... Don't worry. They take care of that in later movies. They upgrade the model.
Yeah.
Ugh, he's such a small man. So the sex scene, she's almost. They had definitely had him on a when they take his shirt off. They had him on an Apple box. They had him on a Tom Cruise Apple box.
You see that small?
Because he's not. I don't think he's that much taller.
She's listed
tiny.
As 6 feet tall online, but you know, who knows if that's ever accurate?
Maybe from a distance.
So yeah, we get this Marilyn Manson montage and a Triple M.
Oh, this.
And they're doing the raid, and Dom and Letty are getting at it, and we see Lance at the New Saigon restaurant.
Oh, I'm so happy Lance gets owned.
And he gets clotheslined. he starts running, and this big cop just like, yeah, he just lands
a cop
him
we
on the
never
ground.
Even like see. Like it's never in the, it's not like chokeslam cop in the credits. This guy is a hero. He basically, he slams him to the ground and then sticks his knee in his neck. What's that move called, Doug? When you stick your knee on a guy's neck.
In police work?
Both. I know you do like jujitsu too. Is it a move in jujitsu or is it a police specific move?
No, it could be done.
Are you told to not really do that? Is that not a normal move? That's more of a riot.
No, actually quite an effective handcuffing technique.
Sure.
I mean, I've done that to livestock before.
Mo,
I have
tell
so many
Rick.
Questions.
Rick, your life is fascinating.
All right. So there was this one time I was up in the, mountains of Nevada. This is like way up north there, far away from Vegas, but I was invited to be part of a branding and inoculating and castrating team for a new batch of cattle. So the guys on the horses brought all the cows into the pen, and then they would go in.
They're called cowboys.
The cowboys would rope
the guys
calves,
on the horses,
drag the calves out of the herd, and then if you had the inoculator guns, you had like three or four of them that you had to all just inoculate all of them at once. But for the people that had to hold the calves still, they were doing what the cops are doing in this movie here, where you'd put your knee on their neck because they're calves, but they're still a couple hundred pounds. So you got to get on these things and keep them still while they're getting branded, castrated, and inoculated.
Okay.
And yeah, I did get to walk away with a bag full of Rocky Mountain oysters that day.
Oh, lovely.
They were tasty.
So you said you were invited to be a part of this, and you accepted the invitation. You were like,
oh,
yes,
absolutely.
I really want to do this.
No, he was forced. Someone knocked on his door really early. Murren, maybe he's asking you to come to an inoculation
maybe.
Party.
I would decline that, but cool. Cool, Rick.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with what it's like to put my knee in something's neck. I've never done it to a person,
oh,
though.
God. Mm-hmm. Doug, have you ever done it to a person?
I have.
Or is there pending litigation that you can't talk
no,
about?
No, it's not like a – I mean, usually I wouldn't do it if the guy was face
it's
up.
It's not like a what? It's your knee in my neck.
I wouldn't do it if the guy was face up. He would be face down and you kind of put your knee in the back of his
oh,
on the back
okay.
of his neck. Oh, okay.
Because they put a knee in his neck face.
Yeah,
that's how they do it on the West Coast.
Yeah, the best coast. Yeah.
West Coast cops will put their knee on the front of your neck. East Coast cops have the courtesy to turn you over first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you're not really putting all your weight down on the guy's neck. You know, you're kind of just...
You're basically laying it on his shoulders.
Well, you're...
Because once you pin your shoulder, you can't move, stand up.
Well,
right?
Lay it on the back of his neck, but your weight is still on your feet.
Yeah. You're still on your haunches.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha.
Exactly. But you set it there to prevent him from moving.
What would you do as a cop if the father of the perp you had just handcuffed came running at you? How tased would this guy have been in this?
He'd be pretty tased.
How thrown to the ground would this guy be? His father, Trent's father, they're at breakfast or lunch.
In the burbs.
Brunch.
In the burbs and the suburbs of LA.
They live in
and
like a
when the
model
team comes
house
in,
community.
The
like it's
yeah, like the father, it's a McMansion. The father goes running up to Tran and smacks him like, you've brought dishonor to my family. But this is in a tactical situation. I don't think you can run toward anybody in this moment.
I wouldn't think so. If he's running with his hands open, you know, he's obviously not holding any weapons. You might not tase him, but you do take control of him. You neutralize him.
Take control. I like that. Tell me more about that. So they take control of Tran. There's three guys on Tran.
Yeah. And this is, there's
Brian
no audible dialogue during this. It's just Marilyn Manson.
Brian is in his, it's still no audible dialogue, just like,
I made a note, I always watch movies with subtitles on, and when the song started, it said rap, and then parentheses, indistinct.
The music in this movie is so overpowering. Yeah. I'm sitting here trying to watch it, and it's like the dialogue is really low, and then the music kicks in, and it's like at least five levels higher than mm-hmm. the dialogue. And I'm like, geez, I'm crawling. And I got to turn it all the way down real quick, and then I can turn it back up. It's like my...
Were you about to say geez, I'm crow?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, that's an East Coast thing. I like that.
Yep.
Cheese and rice.
Cheese oh, yeah. and crackers.
Juicy crust.
Faith and Begora. So the raid is over.
Mm.
They have done their job. Brian is looking at a pool, so you know he's thinking about things. Mm-hmm. This is the moment when they're talking about, you've gotten in too deep. You've fallen for, man. It's all going to be good now. And then we find out, oh, Tran didn't do anything.
And his dad, despite smacking him, paid bail. So he's not even in jail right now.
Yep. And that's when our FBI agent is all up in
Bilkins.
Brian again.
Brian, and you screwed up. And it's like, no.
Brian was telling them not to do this.
You acted on a tip. He told you not to do this. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, the fact that Brian was like in that quote unquote afterglow period and they sprung a question on him and he was like, yeah, sure. Go for it. I'm not saying that he said go for it and raid the Tran stuff because he was like post-sex feeling good, but it just so happened that that was the time he was in.
Well, it's not post-sex now. It's like post-sex like...
Well, no. When they called
from
him.
From the morning.
And they said, should we move on Tran? And he was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Not that he said it that exact way. But
just say yes. And he said, yeah. So that's not a yes.
Exactly.
It's not a no.
And also, he needed to move on Mia and put his foot elbow on her neck. That's what she enjoys. She has.
That's how Coneheads do it.
Did you figure? Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it on France.
How long Brian's been undercover on this job? A week, maybe.
Three days. That's what it feels like. It just feels like there. I mean, obviously, he's known by the boss, and I don't think the boss knows he's a cop. Wait, does the boss know he's a cop?
I'm not sure. I don't think so either, but it could be. It's not really clear in that scene, that one scene that the boss has, the Jimmy Stewart boss.
Could have been two scenes.
But the pressure that Bilkins is putting on him is...
The pressure that he's putting on his neck?
The pressure that Bilkins is putting on Brian's neck is completely, like, unwarranted.
Yeah, he says, like, you're not putting this on me. He's like, yeah, I am, kid. It's one of the perks of the job.
But he tells him he's got 36 hours to crack the case. Or first of all, he says you might want to think about another career. Like, this guy has the power to fire Brian over not solving this thing. But even Donnie Brasco, again, this is the second time. You probably don't hear the first time I mentioned Donnie Brasco, but this is a second.
Yeah, let's just go with this is the first time you mentioned Donnie Brasco.
Joe Pistone, the FBI agent, went undercover. For 6 years he was in there. And even that was only supposed to be a 6-month operation that turned into 6 years, but 6 months is still a reasonable amount of time to get enough intelligence to maybe, get a prosecution or two. Mm-hmm. But Brian's been undercover for like, a couple of days or a week. And he's saying, you better crack this thing in 36 hours or you're fired.
Yeah. And the scene ends with him saying there's all kinds of family, Brian. And that's the choice you have to make. I don't quite understand what that means, but I think he's saying, you need to choose your cop family or if you want to be a go native and be with me.
This part felt like Sergeant Tanner was turning into like Mufasa or something where he's like, it's Toretto, Brian. It's always been Toretto.
If you look up into the sky, Brian, these are all the cops looking down upon you, the cops of the past.
It's Toretto, Brian. It always has been Toretto.
Yeah. That's good.
That's better than my Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah. That's very good. That's very good. Ted.
Very good.
Which you probably don't hear my Vin Diesel.
But thank God. You know what? Some happy accidents happen when you're recording. The car is ready.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move to the next scene. We got to speed on through this. Rick, how much time do you have left?
They also just quickly they go on a little drag race, impromptu drag race with the Ferrari
they
guy.
The Ferrari.
Ferrari guy that played by a cameo by producer Neil H. Moritz.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about that line, guys. I'm going to say the word Ferrari after everything I say to somebody. I'm going to be like, more than you can afford, pal.
Ferrari.
He says, he lives it very badly. He's like, more than you can afford, pal. Ferrari.
I wish that was his catchphrase.
Ferrari. Yeah, that's right.
These are two car guys, obviously. I'm sure they know what kind of car it is.
Yep. They go to the shrimp shack after the race with the
Yeah, they go to Neptune's Net, which is also in Point Break. That's where Neptune's Net in Point Break is the Dom's Toretto's Market.
Oh.
Oh my god. So it's a shared universe. Is this our first shared universe
that
thing?
That totally works.
There's been a couple other connections, but this is the one I think this is the one where they like this is a location that is used in both movies. And they get shrimp just like they get in Point Break.
I can't pay for my own shrimp.
This conversation is bonk. I'm going to go through it quickly, but this conversation, I really had some trouble with it. So what's wrong, Brian? Nothing, man. I'm fine. Come on. Obviously, something's off. Look, I have my good days and my bad days, just like anybody else. Brian, don't lose that cool of yours. That's your meal ticket. My meal ticket? I can pay for my own shrimp? I got the shrimp. And then he goes, no, that's the thing about me. You don't understand. I don't take handouts. I earn my way every step. I need something extra on the side like you. Like, there's so many jumps in logic in that. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then they go on.
Second most upsetting thing to watching Vin Diesel kiss someone is watching him eat a shrimp.
What, his jawbone sticking out?
No, I always get so bothered by people who don't, like, what you do is you pinch the tail and the meat
yeah.
of the shrimp pops out of the tail and then you can toss the tail. You don't. Bite the base of the tail.
Also, he puts the shrimp in his mouth like it's a lollipop. He puts it in forwards. I don't ever eat shrimp that way. I think I eat like kind of like they're at an angle. Like when I pick up a shrimp, it's kind of at a 45 degree angle and I'm just kind of putting it in my mouth. Like the curved part kind of goes
in my
mouth.
Oh yeah, like hooks the
shrimp. He takes the shrimp forward and like goes like this. I'm like, that's not how anyone who's ever eaten a shrimp eats a shrimp.
He opens his super weird maw.
He should have yeah, just take a handful and just shove them in his mouth.
I want to see him eat the bowl and take the shrimp and throw them out that window. Like, just garnish
usually,
for the
usually
bowl.
That's
the
trucks,
good thing about eating
just
outside.
Got
you just throw your shells out the window.
I'm all full, Brian. I ate a truck last night. Long story. Can't go into it right now.
I like this is some good undercover work by Brian, though, because he knows he's got the time limit, so he's got to get to it. So he concocts this little poor attitude, and then he says, I just need something on the side like you.
Yeah. Yeah. It works.
I'm not saying that sarcastically. He's kind of needling.
He kind of does pull it together. Okay. No. I got to work this guy. I can't just be hanging out anymore. So he gets him. And then in the end, Dom says, yeah, here's how you get to Race Wars. We'll see how you do.
The movie trope of sliding the thing across the table.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. I was expecting when he slid it, I'm like, is he trying to buy Brian? Like, what's happening? Is he offering him a price? What's he doing?
He's giving them the address.
Yeah, he's just giving him the address. I like that. I hope it just said the desert. or like tarmac. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or find your beach. That would be the best. If it just said find your beach.
So then they go to Burning Man with cars.
They do go to Burning Man with cars. So gross. I don't understand the race
war.
I don't understand the
Monica.
Race war. Madness. I don't understand the race war betting system. It seems like if you just see somebody, you just challenge them.
Yeah, anyone can challenge
anyone.
Just
basically
throw down the 2K.
So someone's driving next to Letty is in her car, and then basically Lenny Kravitz, Lenny next to her.
Lenny Kravitz.
And like it starts like he's like giving her crap about being a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she's like, fine, let's race for $2,000.
She does say he says like, why don't we race for that sweet little ass of yours? And she says, you want ass? Go to Hollywood Boulevard. And I want her to say, you want ass?
Get a magazine.
Buy the magazine.
You want ass? Get a magazine.
That's
I love Ass Magazine. It's a great magazine. Yeah, so she races him, wins $2,000, and then goes to a camper that has been set up. There's some sort of camper system thing going on. I don't know if they rented this. I don't know if is this like the Ja Rule since Ja Rule did the music. Is this or is it and is in the movie? Is this like a did he have these flown in? I know Ja Rule's not really good at planning events.
This is his
so
event.
I assume he's not
speaking
really
of Ja Rule. I feel like the guy that Letty beats should have been Ja Rule again. Just to like,
yeah,
have him come back. So then he's Monica. The guy who always
that whole that chunk one is another movie. The racing at night. This is
a whole.
Thank God, at least
level.
They're racing. At least they race. This is completely different. These are not street racers at this point. You're not street racing. It is a quarter mile, but it's. Not on a street. It's on like at a place they've. I assume they got permits.
Yeah, I think
straight
this is
up
legal.
Drag racing. Yeah,
yeah. They just go drag racing, which is great. And then Jesse is, of course, you know, Brian, now that you brought it up, he is really involved in Jesse's life. It's really annoying.
And it's even worse because, like, Brian's like, why are you racing for pinks? And Jesse's like, I learned it from watching you.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to race for pinks. And this is the saddest line. This is the saddest line ever. It's like, I'm going to race for pinks. We're going to, and then I'm going to drive with my dad. We're going to drive together. When my dad gets out of jail, I'm like, oh, this guy is going to freaking die.
This is so weird. He's like, oh, I need another car so that when my dad gets out of prison, we can drive together. Can't he ask
Dom to borrow a car? He has like 17.
Dom just like built a car and just gave it to Brian. So why can't Jesse have a car? He has to use his dad's?
Oh my God.
Do you guys think they missed an opportunity to call this Car Wars?
Oh my God. Such a better name.
They did.
Car Wars would have been such a better name.
And it wouldn't.
Race Wars is so problematic on so many levels.
Like, Race Wars implies that there's going to be more than one type of race.
Mm-hmm.
Not just drag racing.
Yeah, you know, black,
white. Yeah, I
thought
maybe it was going to be like all these different events. Basically. Let's do our promotion for Hyper Time or whatever the name of that show.
Hyperdrive. On Netflix.
Hyperdrive on Netflix. Please go watch it. If you're listening to our podcast and not part of the group, that show is bonkers awesome. It is American Ninja Warrior for cars. That's what I thought Race Wars was going to be. Like, also, how much you can pull, how much you can drift. Can you drift in a circle perfectly? I was expecting feats of strength along with racing. Instead, it seems to just be one race at a time. Everybody get in line and let's see what happens. And you kind of decide with the person in the other car what the stakes are going to be as you're driving up.
And
to
we also,
race.
We set up the scene before where like Paul, you know, Brian is like, oh, I want to be part of the team. He's like, we'll go to Race Wars. We'll see how you do. And we do not see him race.
He does nothing at Race Wars.
Except
neither does Vin.
And they're writing these numbers on the cars, and there's like 819. There's so many cars here. Like at least 819.
Well, do you think they number every car just in case you want to race? Because in this system, it seems like it's Chronicles of Riddick level of you keep what you kill. You just kind of find the biggest person, do the thing you want to do with them, race them. And then if you win the bet, you have to pay up immediately, like table stakes.
Yeah, nice way to work in another Vin Diesel property there.
Quick question.
Let's head to a little advertisement.
Race Wars!
Race Wars!
Sunday at Smokin' US 30 Drag Strip. Watch the best rear engine field dragsters in the country try to push their brute machines into the magic 5-second elapsed time barrier.
From Michigan, Tim Arnold's fierce hallucination fueler.
From Ohio, John Hilton's motion maker rear engine field dragster.
From LaGrange, Illinois, it's Gary Dye's LaGrange Dodge Dragster.
From Detroit, see John McNew's savage fueler rampage.
From Chicago, John Cinnabaldi's super fad 230 mile per hour Scarlet Fever.
Plus from Missouri, the tough team of Hurst and Pryor.
Plus over 100 entries compete for the Great Pro Stock and Run Tough Eliminator Cash Awards.
Smokin' US 30 Drag Strip is located south of Gary, 2 miles east of Interstate 65 on Highway US 30.
15 and under Freewood Age ID.
Spectator admission only $3.
The trackside 1:30 Sunday for all the excitement and enjoyment of the Wild Fuel Dragster Competition.
Sunday at Smokin' US 30 Drag Strip.
Where the Great Wars run.
Can I bounce back to the garage real quick where we were showing off the Mustang or
the
Charger?
You're bouncing back to the garage? Sure.
Okay. When I was watching Fast and the Furious yesterday for admittedly the first time, Dom and Brian walking up to that garage, I leaned over to Julia and I said, how great would it be if they got to that garage and he opened it up and it was in like the Iron Giant where it was just the giant figure covered with scrap metal and Dom's like, this is my art. I've been working on it.
That would be great.
That joke's only funny to someone who was forced to watch The Iron Giant in the past month. And that's me and you. And we're the only two that had to do that. No, actually, Doug, too. Excuse me.
And then The Iron Giant would wake up and be like, Superman. And they'd have it would have been better
if it was just like off in the corner and it wasn't addressed.
Yes, it's just an Iron Giant.
It's a little Easter egg.
Yeah. I mean, they put The Iron Giant in Ready Player One. I feel like the Fast and Furious series, we just had a cyborg. I feel like we're only a couple movies away from getting an Iron Giant.
Okay, and we can talk about this when we do talk about Hobbs and Shaw. Do we consider – I don't consider that part of Fast and Furious canon to have a cyborg. That is in a spinoff movie.
So, okay.
I mean, well, no, it still exists in the
it's
universe.
It's still in canon. It might not be one of the numbered
films. Has Dominic or has Vin Diesel come out and said,
anything that happens, now I'm Louis Armstrong. First of all, where's my trumpet? Second of all, anything that happens in Hobbs and Shaw is definitely something we can address at some point.
Are you trying to pitch some sort of like Fast and the Furious multiverse situation?
I don't know if I'm pitching it.
I feel like I'm the most qualified to tackle this.
Uh-huh.
I don't
put your leg on its neck.
I'm going to put my leg on its neck.
Yeah.
The knee, just the knee.
Oh yeah.
I don't consider the Creed movies in the Rocky lineage.
Oh,
really?
Rocky's a character.
If your 1,000 listeners could hear you now, they would leave your Facebook group.
I've said as much in the Facebook group, and wow. I don't care what people think. I'm not doing the Creed movies 1 minute at a time. Maybe that's why.
Okay, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Just
well,
because you don't have to you're do unwilling it, but... to cover it 1 minute at a time doesn't mean that it's not part of the shared universe of movies.
It's part of the shared universe, but as far as like the Rocky line, I think it's, you know, the Back to the Future, 1985B to the regular line.
Okay, so it's a parallel universe.
It's a parallel universe, yes.
Okay.
That's not bad.
I could live with that. If we call Hobbs and Shaw, they're the same characters, but they're in a parallel universe, so the events don't take place. Anyway, we got a lot of movie to talk about before we get to that.
Yeah.
So Jesse has decided to race Tran at
Race Wars,
and
oh, yeah.
We know why, because he wants to get his dad a car.
Wants to get his dad a car so they can roll together when he gets out of prison.
And when they pull up to the starting line, I'm like, this isn't going to be fair.
No,
I don't care what Jesse does to that car. Dom says that he's put $100,000. Tran has put $100,000 under the hood of that car.
And it was Brian that said that.
All you have to do is just look at the way Johnny Tran looks in his tank top and his facial expression, and then see the way Jesse looks with his little beanie.
Jesse has some fear in his eyes. Johnny Tran does not.
You can tell how this is going to go down just by the way they're
end well.
Yeah,
he also doesn't drive correctly during the race. Tran says, "Too soon,
Junior."
So it seems like the whole game of drag racing is when you hit the nos. It's just timing.
Yeah, it's not. It's well. I mean, if you go and think about some of the movies we've watched for Fast and Furious, if you start thinking about them, Nas plays a significant role in the winning of all those races.
Yeah,
even the most recent one in Fast 8, the put together jalopy that he races in Cuba, the reason he wins is because he has a Coke can starter on the Nas. Starts the Nas up, drives backwards on fire. Again, guys, wait until we get to it.
Jesus Christ.
I love this series.
Hey, can I ask you guys a question? And I'm channeling my inner Rob.
Are you recording?
Hold on, let me see. I am.
Then yes, you
are
may
you,
ask
Are
us
you
a
recording?
Question.
Oh, I see. We are recording. We have 10 minutes left.
Yep, 10 minutes left.
Is there a 3-hour cut of this movie somewhere that has all this Brian trying to save Jesse crap?
Release because the Rob Cohen cut.
Oh, God, no.
Because Brian goes into this thing about he's got $100,000 under that car, and then Jesse goes, yep, and then it's cut to the race. Brian's not even next to the car anymore. It's just...
Nope. He's gone back to that
the camper?
The camper.
The trailer.
Swing line or whatever it's called.
Such an odd cut there.
Yeah, there are a couple of those in this movie. It just kind of seems that there's something missing.
I think you're giving this movie too much credit that they shot alternate scenes. I think that the script literally ended, like a scene ended, and they was like, all right, we're done with this scene. Moving on.
No transition to the next.
Shot it in order.
Because I think they shot, I mean, it feels like they shot everything at Golden Hour.
Yeah.
Because all of Race Wars is beautiful and golden. And you get that light in the morning and you get that light at night. There's only 1 hour on either side where you get that kind of light, where everyone looks this way. So, I mean, you can kind of see it, like, especially when they're about to race. The sun is literally right above the mountains in the background. So it's either early in the morning or about to be dusk.
Yeah. Perfect time for racing. Perfect time for setting up tents. Perfect time for wet t-shirt contests. I mean, whatever you want to do.
It's always a perfect time for wet t-shirt contest.
Is it a contest or there's just one contestant.
Oh, there are technically two women.
Oh, okay.
Participating, one with her back to the camera, and one that is shaking.
Okay, hmm. I missed the one with her back to the camera.
This is the only time I think tank tops are appropriate. So. It's the only appropriateness for tank tops. Every other time, not. They race. Jesse loses. Jesse freaks out. Jesse drives away.
Jesse has black nails, too. I noticed that when he presses the NOS.
That's very early on. That's an early adopter of that. I know now that, I mean, at that point, I'm sure it was emo or something. Now a lot of people have.
It was big in the 90s, but you didn't have the black nails unless you had the black eye makeup and the black spiky hair and the chain wallet.
He's wearing the Jughead hat, so I don't know.
Did Jesse have a goth phase and now he's kind of transitioning out of it?
Probably in high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Before he bailed on high school because of all the, just couldn't do it, man. Just couldn't do the English classes.
Can't hang on,
Jesse drives away, and Tran says the exact thing that we all think in the audience. We're like, where's Jesse going? We're like, yeah, where is Jesse going?
I love Dom is like, oh, yeah, he's going to the car wash. Where do you think he's going?
That's a great response, though.
Yeah.
A great sarcastic response.
Hey, where's Jesse going? You want to know where Jesse's going? Find a magazine. Find a boy's life. Find a boy's life. I don't know what else it would be.
Car wash.
Find a Ranger Rick. And he's like, Tran's like, well, get me my car.
Fetch my car.
He's like, what do you mean fetch my car?
What does he think?
Is that, again, don't understand how race wars work. If your team, if your gang makes a bet and they welch on the bet, does the other people have to be impacted by it?
This is my favorite bit of Vin Diesel acting in the whole movie.
It's the highest. You know, we've talked about Maximum Woo on our other podcast. Is this Maximum Vin Maximum for a while? Diesel.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's being held back and he screams in a second. And it's like, oh, this, I didn't know we were going here. Because but Vin would never
he gets,
make...
He gets incredibly offended by what Johnny Tran said. Johnny Tran gets very upset. And he goes to a level of what I like to call James Dean overacting. Where he's just kind of like very tense and he's very upset and he's trying to hold it down
through gritted teeth.
Yeah, and he accuses Dom of being the narc because he had the cops come to his house and he got arrested, and that's when you find out his dad bailed him out of jail. And then Vin just loses it and punches him and starts going to town.
He gets one punch in and then he yells, Doug, what does he yell?
I never knocked on nobody!
It sounds like he's saying, I never knocked on nobody. Yeah. But he's saying, I never narked on nobody.
Dom doesn't knock. Dom aggressively rings the doorbell.
like a junkie.
I never went to your house. I was never looking for Michael.
That first punch is incredible because it's a quick left that gives him such momentum that he has to stop in his tracks and come back.
Yeah, he hit, jump on. Because he's so short, he punches across Tran's body and like takes him like he almost does a what's it called in football when you do your legs over legs like when you're warming up
like a
you go side to side
karaoke.
Yeah, like a karaoke kind of thing. Like we like run. That's basically what he does. He punches him so hard that he flies into the crowd himself.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It gave him such momentum that he had to stop and come back to jump on top.
I'm amazed security shows up and there's not one gun in this movie, in this scene.
Yeah.
You tell me at Race Wars there's not any guns showing up?
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, this is an event I would expect the Hells Angels to be doing security for.
Yeah, like they're not the Hells Angels. They're the huge angels. Every guy that comes in here is larger. Actually, if anything, they're a little Samoan. Most of the guys look like Samoans.
They're the Rocks family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe that's how they tie this in.
Our family came over here in the early 2000s.
Maybe he's one of the security guards.
Yeah.
That's where he got to start in the race circuit.
Yep.
I mean, Hobbs does have a lot of brothers.
Yeah. In Hobbs 1... Fast and Furious story. We'll see the backstory where he was a security guard,
and then prequel.
He found the plans to Race Wars.
Pre Hobbs.
Yeah,
the plans.
I don't know.
It's like a blueprint.
It doesn't make any sense.
Hold on, Hold on. Are we just going to glance over the fact that while Dom and Johnny are fighting, that Letty just decks a guy? Is that Lance? Does she deck Lance?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Lance comes running in, and Letty knocks him out with one punch.
For the second time.
He goes Lance is like a cartoon character.
I would have been so happy if she had stepped on his neck.
Like, again? Well, Brian looking on at Dom going ham on Tran is like his Brian.
I'll have a ham
saying,
on Tran, please.
No crust.
The number one.
Hold the mayo.
With no crust.
No narc.
Is he saying, like, thinking that Dom's really crazy?
I think he's trying to figure out how he can insinuate himself in here. Well, they're showing him because they're yelling the word narc, narc, narc. They just like, we should probably show
narc!
The
narc.
Oh, man,
narc!
I love a good bit of cinematic subtlety.
Yeah.
But he's getting pushed around like he's in a mosh pit.
Yeah. Yep. Well, a bunch of security guards come in, like a good five or ten.
And after the fight, we have a change of scenery, and Race Wars turns into Rave Wars.
Rave Wars.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So 90s.
I love the dude with the light sticks on the strings, and he's just spinning around like he's, like, raving out.
Well, this music is
amazing.
Bad.
Now, you guys, Murren and Rick, might be a little young to remember the raves of the 90s, but the glow sticks, like twirling the glow sticks, was a huge thing.
There was always some dude twirling glow sticks. He'd probably broken one open and smeared the stuff on his body, and then also, for some reason, had a pacifier in his mouth. This is usually Captain Rave.
Well, the
and you would
pacifier
see him at raves.
Was laced with some sort of
like ecstasy or something.
Yeah, like a hallucinogen.
And isn't that also because, like, on ecstasy, you like, your teeth start chattering or something? So you, like, you have to protect. Is that
right,
what
like you grind? I think
you grind your teeth or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know anything about that.
Me neither.
Me neither.
I never participated in a rave.
No, I haven't.
I never participated in a rave either.
I have been to them as a relatively sober person.
Spectator?
As a spectator,
and seen them and just kind of went, not my thing.
Not for me.
A rave when you're sober must be the worst experience possible.
I mean, I had some drinks. Mm-hmm. Like, we were basically going from one party to a next, and we go show up at one, and you're like, oh, it's a rave. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't know until you walked in. You're like, oh, no. What have I done?
Black lights on.
That's Jonathan in the 90s. Oh, no.
Oh, no, I'm at a rave. Oh, no.
Yeah, I show
what
up at a
rave. What a wonderful rave.
And then Brian is going to the camper, and he's looking for Mia. He sees Mia out the window, and she's yelling at Dom and trying to get Dom to not go somewhere, and Dom and Leon or Vince are leaving. Yeah. And he's like, oh, crap. One, if you were a good cop, you wouldn't have left them alone for this long. You should be with them right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get eyes on them.
You somehow lost them. Well, we should wrap this up on another after another commercial break.
He was known as Satchmo. Pops, Louie.
I see trees.
Like a favorite uncle, he was one of the fans. A regular visitor on the Ed Sullivan Show.
When you smiling.
Now, from 2D Legends, you get the whole amazing story for the first time in one special collector's edition set.
Give me a kiss.
Today, his music is still the sound of our favorite romantic movies. Read the magazine and get the inside story behind Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Dolly. This is Louis. Dolly, what a wonderful...
Louis Armstrong Legends. You get all the great songs on CD or cassette, plus the Keepsake magazine. You get both for the low price of $16.95. Call now.
To order 2D Legends Louis Armstrong, call the number on your screen or send check or money order for $16.95 plus shipping and handling. Rush delivery available. 2D Legends Louis Armstrong is not sold in stores.
The guys are leaving the Race Wars inexplicably. We're not seeing their point of view. We're only seeing Brian, so... He's going to go find out from Mia and try and pump her for information and see where Dom's going.
Okay, so you have to wait in line to get into Race Wars, and mm-hmm. Brian was handed something by the security guard when he got in. I don't mm-hmm. know if that was his license or something, but when you leave Race Wars, do you get like your hand stamped, or do you get like a bracelet?
So you can get back
how in. To come back in?
Yeah, how do they know that you've already been admitted once?
You have to get one of those glow-in-the-dark pacifiers, and you have to need to be sucking on that when you come back. Like, all right, he's cool. Let him in.
I kind of hoped it was like the Portland Zoo where they had a stamp station where if you want to come back, just stamp yourself.
Yeah, they do that at Six Flags, all the amusement parks.
Yep. Race War. Once you're in Race Wars, you're in all day. It's like Lollapalooza. Can't leave. More acting from Mia. She's totally normal. Not an alien whatsoever.
Yeah, we have a little bit, some drama between her and Brian. He reveals that he's been a cop.
Under the slightest amount of pressure, he reveals that he's a cop.
And just in the middle of everybody.
It seems like a really bad time to reveal it. I mean, I don't know. I guess he's doing it. This is sort of like a Hail Mary pass he's doing, where he's just like, okay, maybe if I just tell her everything, she'll go along with it.
I don't. It's
the sister of the main guy that I'm trying to get will just be on my side.
I enjoy the Jesus Christ move when he grabs her arm. She's like, let go. Jesus Christ. That's exactly what my wife says to me when we're walking somewhere. And I'm like, hey, can we do this? Hey, Jesus Christ. What? What?
Jesus Crow.
Isn't it like it's a clunky line reading by Brian, too, when he's like, Mia, I'm a cop. Like, I don't think you would just come out and say it that. I mean, I never tell people I'm a cop.
It's like, so
what do you say? I am an officer of the law.
I'm a police officer, or in his thing, I'm an undercover agent. Like, I'm a cop sounds like such a.
You guys don't call yourself cops.
We don't.
We call you cops.
Yes, you do.
The popo.
Reminded me of The Departed. Are you still a cop? Are you still a cop?
That's a good Jack Nicholson.
I'm looking at. Hold on. Give me a second. I'm looking.
And when she goes, you bastard, is like, that's her soap opera acting coming to the surface.
You bastard. I expected like organ music to come in. And then a person with an eye patch walk in the door and be like, hello, Mia.
Quivering a little bit.
I'm Brian's brother.
Her face.
Brian.
I mean, that's later. His brother does show up.
Yeah, but not for good reasons.
No, not for that reason.
Gosh. Okay, so compare Brian to Johnny Utah when it comes to revealing to the people you're talking to that you are an officer of the law. And I have to give it to Johnny Utah because his delivery is just so much, so much more.
I mean, that's essential Keanu Reeves line. That, I mean,
yeah, it's really well done.
But he's also stating,
this is a cast off. This is the story going, ugh, we just can't have him not be a cop anymore.
Yeah. It's just,
we need him to have his cop powers back.
In Point Break, he's discovered accidentally by, Lori Petty. She finds his gun. And then later on, the FBI agent line is just, they already know he's an FBI agent. He has conviction about it and he needs them to know.
Brian basically scares Mia into showing him where they are because he says the truckers are basically going to attack him at some point.
The truckers are the biggest threat to anyone in this movie. That's the they're like the Death Star in this. Yeah. Like, you got to watch out.
They're
truckers.
Coming.
The truckers are coming.
3 minutes until the truckers are in range.
Well, like, there's an after credit scene where all these trucks show up in the desert and they're all lined up and like
truck wars.
Let's not forget every law enforcement agency in the state of California is coming down on them, man.
Yep.
They're all of a sudden going to do what they haven't been able to do so far and come down on them.
This is conspicuous behavior. What's happening right now? And all them out in the middle. They're all in the middle of the desert racing around. That's crazy. They jump
generally
in a car
psychotic
and as
behavior.
They drive off and they change to this next scene, I laughed out loud because when I saw a roadmap, actual honest to God Rand McNally roadmap, I was like, what the hell is this? I had such flashbacks to my childhood.
You know, now, at least it's not a MapQuest printout.
That's true. We got to go to point A first, otherwise I won't know how to get us there. I did it like a thing, like, you know, point A to point B. If we're not at point A, the things don't make any sense.
I used to be a courier in the early 2000s, and I had to use roadmaps to find my next pickup or drop-off, and it was tedious,
yeah,
for sure.
I bet.
It's funny that you call it courier. We call it drug mule. you put stuff on your up your bum and went on planes and flew different places.
No, that's a different movie altogether.
Hey, Myrn, are you old enough to have? I don't think. Did you have roadmaps as a kid on trips with your family? Were roadmaps even a thing, or had they finally gotten to at least you could buy that Garvin GPS and mount it on your car?
When I was very young, I think we had we did a road trap.
Doug does. He does road traps.
Oh, I'm tired. I remember having a roadmap for like when I was very young, but not for too long. We switched over pretty quick.
As a kid, that was the way we went places, and it sucked. Yeah.
On long road trips, my dad would plan out like the night before which route we're going to take.
Oh, man. My dad likes to tell this story of when he went on a road trip with his parents and his brother once, and they were camping, and my grandpa laid out the map, and he took a quarter, and he, like, flipped the quarter end over end along the route that they were going to take, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's going to take us exactly this long to go this route. And my dad was so amazed that it worked out exactly the
distance. Oh, is a quarter the size of the map legend?
Exactly.
Like 25 miles, so you knew every time you rotate it once.
Wow.
That's actually a pretty good idea. Too bad we don't have maps anymore. But
my parents,
I put that on my phone, people think I'm insane. Look, how far away is this?
Yeah. My parents used maps a lot because they were always too cheap to buy a Garmin. So once the smartphones caught up and got the GPS, now they use it. But
yeah,
when you're lost, you're family. My parents to this day get lost using the GPS because they don't believe it. And more than once, they're like, now use the thing do what it actually says. I'm like, yeah, I always do what my computer says. If it tells me to drive off a cliff, I probably would.
Man, I tell you one thing, using the Google Maps feature in the rental car that I was using when I went out to Portland, that city is terrible
for
navigation because it was having me take rights and lefts and go all this way. And I'm thinking, the city is a grid. I have to turn a grand total twice, and it's having me turn like 17 times.
You think it's a grid, but it's actually not. It's not really a grid. It's an illusion.
You think it's a grid? You never grid.
You never grid.
It was never.
You never
grid.
Had your city.
You never had your city.
Now I have some friends, some actor friends who made funny YouTube videos about the insane intersections in Portland. Like, there's a whole joke about it. It's
Funny enough, most of us, all of us were there. And so it's funny because I thought it was every other block is a murder block because I think it's a four-way stop.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
no. Nothing in Portland is a four-way stop. Mm-hmm. Everything is a two-way stop, and you don't know which way the two-way is when you're walking up to it. If you're a newbie like me, I don't have the right of way. That person will hit me.
Some intersections didn't have any stop signs.
And you don't know who will know that it's not a four-way stop. Because sometimes other people will just assume it is.
Yep. And every intersection is overgrown with trees and people are parking all the way up to the corner.
There's so much weed being just grown in the front yard.
It's overgrown. Yeah, it's terrible.
Just drag Portland for no reason.
That's why Murren lives down in Beavertown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's what. And speaking of Beavertown, they all show up at this weird place in the middle of nowhere. Like, they're in the behind a round building. It's very odd.
A water tower or a reservoir, probably. Yeah,
reservoir. Yeah. And they're getting all their gear together, and they have a bad feeling about it. And that's where this chunk ends, with them talking about having a bad feeling.
They pull out their harpoons.
They do. We see one harpoon before the chunk ends. I'm like, yeah, harpoon.
Man.
It looks like a science fiction weapon.
It does. I'm going to go kill Rathtars. Okay.
I see something like that, and I'm like, oh, man, I want a hyper-intelligent shark to shoot at.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically what Vin Diesel is. He's a hyper-intelligent shark. Vince is a walking gorilla.
He's a street shark.
Yeah, he's a street shark.
Street sharks. I'm a street shark.
This one has the punching power. This one does the chomping. I don't remember all the things he says in that video. Look at the Vin Diesel Street Sharks video. It's wonderful.
So
classic. Oh, doesn't he want to do a Street Sharks movie?
Probably.
Isn't that one of his things? Like, he has things.
Yeah, he has like fantasy novels that he wants to adapt. And
yeah, because didn't he want to be in that movie that the series that they just are doing with Henry Cavill?
Oh, the Witcher.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think he wanted to be the Witcher. Oh, like, oh, I'd love
that'd be
Witcher.
Great. I would
it
love
would
to
be
see
great,
him
but I'm actually kind of okay with someone I can understand.
Yeah.
Because he did do that movie. Remember, he did Witch Hunter.
He did the last Witch Hunter. Yeah.
Yeah. So he did like get to scratch whatever. Yeah. I almost said itch, but I meant scratch that witch. He got to scratch that witch and do it. So.
And that was like his D&D character. He was like playing his D&D character or something.
Yeah. So this is a good time. Let's wrap up with, do we want to talk about, do you guys want to talk about like how you saw these movies the first time? I know Rick saw it.
Oh, and what cars, yesterday. What cars do you, did you start?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's do that. Okay.
What cars did you, were the first cars you owned?
Well, hold on. We're going to wrap up this episode by talking about, cars, our famous segment of what car did you own first? So let's start with Doug. Doug, what car did you own?
My first car was a 1993 Ford Thunderbird.
That's not bad.
That's one of the better answers we've had.
That's cooler than most of the ones. Well, to be fair, some of the answers were a truck and no car. And an 82 Honda Accord. It'd been a lot of crappy cars. So
it was like a maroon color.
Yeah.
It was, I really don't think at that time, I'm talking like 90, I got it in 96, 97. And I don't think I appreciated the car for what it was.
Yeah.
I treated it like shit.
Do they give you a Firebird at birth and you just have to go pick it up?
Not a Firebird, a Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, excuse me.
No, they give us the IROC Z at birth here.
They give
Jersey.
You the IROC Z and the tank top.
With
and
the
tank top expands.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like your skin. The tank top expands as you grow.
Yeah. The tank top is the tank top for cars.
That's correct.
It's
that's
basically
exactly
no shoulders.
That's exactly.
Yep. Rick, what about you? What was your first car?
Oh my gosh. My first car came off the line brand new right around the same time as Doug's from what I heard, or the same year that he was getting his car. My first car was a 96, I want to say, but it was a Hyundai Accent.
Okay.
The way it worked with my
That's
family
a good street racing car.
Is that,
any of these like imports seem to be like the right body type.
I've never heard of a Hyundai being one, though. I think that's
Hyundai is a good Korean brand. It's a good Korean brand.
It's, right.
It's
Korean, not
Japan. Nothing against Hyundai.
Yeah, why do you hate Hyundai so much?
The way it worked is my grandparents gave every grandchild $2,000 towards their first car, and me being cheap, I went and found a car that was exactly $2,000. And to say I found it is a bit of a misnomer because my dad found it, and when he rolled up with it, I saw it and I was like, what is that color? And he handed me the title and it said mauve.
Oh,
beautiful mauve
nice car.
So yeah, it's kind of like a pearlescent pink sort of color. And so I got to spend the next, 3 to 4 years telling people it's not pink, it's mauve. And they're like, what the hell is mauve? And I said, it's pink.
Yeah, basically, imagine what someone's liver looks like from inside their body. That's basically what it is. It's like a pinkish, wet color. So
that was my first car.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It worked out really well. It was a nice little four-seater sedan type of thing, and it got me from point A to point B just fine. And
So only Rob has had a minivan. No one else has had a minivan yet as their first car.
How fast could it do a quarter mile?
Oh yeah.
40 seconds.
That would assume I could find a quarter mile straightaway here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
These people don't know what a straight road is. Even the highways are twisty and turny. If people missed it earlier in this recording, the truck driver in this next scene is my favorite character in this movie. Because he is a guy driving a big rig with a shotgun shooting at people crawling around the outside of it.
Yeah. If we're doing Tokyo Drift, I mean, we'll talk about this next time, but a little preview. We mentioned Hercules, the cartoon. The truck driver in the next scene is played by Kevin Sorbo.
Wait, in an uncredited performance. Serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was he Kevin Sorbo at this point? Like, was he famous? When did Hercules come out?
That was in the 90s.
Late
90s, he was Hercules
right?
already, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I was
well,
so
that's
happy
our
when
talk,
I saw
that'll
that.
Be our Tokyo Drift that we talk about today and then also into the next one.
Yeah. We'll have like Kevin Sorbo facts for next time or something like that.
Kevin Sorbo facts.
Here's a Kevin Sorbo fact for you. He doesn't do good movies anymore. To assume that he ever did good movies.
This is probably close to the top of his list, Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. It's on his IMDb first. That's cool. Well, guys, thank you so much for being on today. This was hilariously fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a good chunk. We did a good chunk, boys.
It's a good slice.
Good luck editing this.
Ride or die, Bandit.
No, I mean, okay.
I'm so bad
outro,
at doing
do you
the
want
outro.
To say anything? Do you want to say anything before we go?
No, I did the whole... Oh, you want, like, if I have any final thoughts?
Yeah.
No.
Ride or die, Racer X.
Ride or die, Bandit.
Ride or die, Torque.
Ride or die.
Ride or die, Tink Top.
Ride or die.
I live life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, if we only had context for that joke from what we didn't record. What if Louis Armstrong played Dominic Toretto? Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny?
That would be funny. Too throaty to be Dominic.
Too throaty, too furious.
I guess.
The people there said it was me that was screaming. I watched my dad burn in a car. Fajitas! Fajitas!
But it's done to the song Tradition from Fiddler on the Roof.
Fajitas! 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 Fajitas!
If I was a racing man,
I'd race 1 mile at a time and I'd run a blah, blah, blah.
Okay, this is all making up for what happened earlier.
Leon and Jess, they just showed up at the house. Yabba-dee-ba-da.
Yabba-dee-ba-da.
And then four of them do that like wedding dance, but they have like tires on their heads instead of wine bottles.
It's like carrying them around in a car seat instead of a chair. The four guys are like holding up a car seat, like moving it up and down. That's actually not a bad.
Yeah.
And it's called Fiddler on the Roof, but it's the roof of the car, and he's fiddling with the car.
Oh yeah.
I kind of like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. You don't even have to change the name. It's the same name.
Don't have to change the name. Vin Diesel presents Fiddler on the Roof.
Executive producer Vin Diesel coming to NBC Live. Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh my God, live! I would watch a live Vin Diesel Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh my God, he should do that. That would be a great publicity.
Yeah, he should do that. That's what his career needs right now. The man makes $1 billion a year. Hey, you want to shill over here on TV and sing?
I wish
that worked out well for Russell Crowe. You should do it.
Yeah.